everybody. I'm Rick Dancer. Welcome to Get Real with Rick Dancer. We have a really interesting story for you tonight. This Saturday, the 4th of November, I think it's 1 to 4, I will have a brochure that I'll put up there with the exact time and dates. But some of the local tribe folk are coming to Townsend, Montana, to talk to the people in the community about Native Americans, people who were here before the rest of us came to Montana, the original people of our country. And back when I was in Oregon, I was very close to the different tribes in Oregon. So I was interested to find out the difference here in Montana. So we sat down with a really interesting gentleman in Helena, and I'll let him introduce himself in the video. But this is a really interesting conversation. And I think for anyone, especially for someone like myself who's a newcomer here, I kind of want to know what the original people thought, what was going on, and where there are still some holes, and where we can help, and where I can learn from them, and that sort of thing. So anyway, I hope that appeals to you. Our sponsors for this show, we cannot do this. In fact, if you are somebody out there who likes just good presentations and good information, we're always looking for sponsors, and you can contact me at rickdancer.com. But one of our sponsors, longtime sponsor, Chris Dental Family Dentistry in Eugene, Oregon. If you live in Oregon and you're looking for a dentist who believes in your civil liberties and a healthy gum, he's the guy. Just today, he sent me a whitening kit. A couple times a year, I whiten my teeth just because I think it's good to keep them from looking stained and old. And Dr. Bratlett can do that for you. In fact, they have a special going right now. I think they'll give you a free kit for new patients. You can get a free whitening kit, and they'll help you know how to do that. So Dr. Bratlett, we appreciate your sponsorship also. Greg Hinkle at Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation. He's a local guy from Oregon, from Washington, but he knows how to do loans. He's here in Montana in Helena. He's a mortgage lending specialist. And if you think you can't afford a home right now, well, he might have a program that might work just for you. I know interest rates are going up and down, but you still need to live somewhere. And Greg's the guy to call if you need someone to help you through that process also. Montana Oral Surgery and Dental Implant Center in Helena, in Bozeman, in Great Falls, and also in Butte, and servicing people in all the areas. Got to interview one of the new doctors recently, and just amazing people. Anything from pulling teeth to major reconstruction. The doctor I talked with used to do reconstructions on grizzly bear maulings on people. They really do take care of folks. And also our sponsor, Alvard Taylor Endless Possibilities out of Oregon. We're in Springfield and Eugene area, working with people with different abilities, giving them a great place to live and a great home. If you're looking for a career that will challenge you, but also make you a better person, I guarantee this is the group to work with. What I'm going to do tonight now, I went to the Daniels upholstery business in Helena and had this conversation. I may cut into it. There's a point when we're talking about a story that I did quite a few years ago on a Cape Arago. And I may just cut into that a little bit, show you that story, and then go back to Daniel's interview. But I'd like you to take a listen, and I'll put up some information during that so you'll know when this is all going on in Townsend, Montana. So here's Daniel.
Answer. Okay. We're here with Daniel Pocha.
Yep.
And he is with one of the local tribes here in Montana, and I'm super interested, but he is what we call Anishinaabe.
Yes.
And so tell people what an Anishinaabe is.
Anishinaabe, that's Chippewa for First People. So we introduce ourselves as First People as Anishinaabe. And it's several tribes from the Great Lake area that were closely related to use the same term and the same word. The Potawatomi are Anishinaabe too. We're First Peoples. We've always been here. So from time.
How many tribes in Montana do we know of?
There are 12 recognized tribes. And we're on seven. There's seven reservations. But the Little Shell was the last federally recognized tribe. But we don't have a land base. We do not have a reservation. We were recognized, I think, in 2019 is when the federal recognition was finally granted by Congress.
So why so late for your tribe?
Well, that would be something you would have to ask, because we fought for 157 years for re-recognition because we were treated with the federal government back in 1857 in Minnesota at the Old Crossings Treaty when the first Chief Little Shell signed that treaty. But it was the politics, as history went on, they wanted to quit negotiating treaties with tribes for land bases and such things after the Civil War.
So your tribe again, what's the name of it?
The Little Shell Tribe of Montana, of Chippewa Indians.
So is your plan, like big picture plan, to have reservation land or to, you know, open a casino or anything like that?
Well, we want to do a lot of things for economic development, and actually we own a half a dozen businesses right now that help grow economic development. It doesn't employ a lot of people, but it is a little diversified, and it's a strong group of businesses they started. But it's one of these things you have to work at, because you have to earn that money. It just doesn't come to you. When you get federally recognized, you'll get some money to administrate the tribe, to do the tribal government. And you will be able to do grants underneath the federal government for housing, language, education, food sovereignty. And these are some things we've already contracted to and have done, established programs doing that.
And the reason you'd do something bigger to get reservation land would be for health care for your people, because you have how many in Helena region in this area?
Well, in Helena, there's a very poor population. We're not part of the service area. The service area is Cascade, up towards Havre, up on the High Line. We have three counties that are a service area that we're actually, by law, that is the area we serve. But we're scattered throughout the United States. I go up and do a meeting, a Zoom meeting, in Great Falls, and that's where we're usually based out of. Our governmental offices are in Great Falls. But I've had elders Zoom in from Michigan, Portland, California, all over the country, to join in an elders meeting so we can discuss, because we're dispersed everywhere.
So what do people least know about the tribes in Montana, do you think? You do this all the time, because Daniel's going to be in Townsend and some other areas. He goes around and talks about this to people so people can get educated about it. And I think the cool thing, you're doing the one in Townsend. There's two young ladies who are part of the tribe, or they have, and their parents just want them to understand better and their town to understand, which is really cool, I think.
Yeah, we've done some of these, they call them soup and stories. I think the first one was in Missoula, but we've done them. I've been in one in Helena, a couple in Helena, and one in Great Falls.
What is it? What is a soup and story?
Well, we get together and an elder, and we'll tell stories, and then we'll all share a meal afterwards. So you get that soup and a story, and it.
What is a story? So is this a story about your people?
It'll be history. I'll do a lot of history, where one of my good friends, Louise Fisher, will do a native story. She will tell it. The last one was a bear story, how the bear lost his tail. You know, so they're entertaining stories, and they're that story is really designed for young kids. So there's a lot of stories that we have. And
is this how you passed it, like how your people always did, and how,
yes.
Well, most different cultures pass down through story.
Yes, we did. We were an oral history. And that was one of the things when you went into winter camp, you had done everything you had to, so that was a time for storytelling, so that you people could, the people could get together, the elders, and pass on stories and educate our youngsters on how to, how these things meant and the value they had to them. And Montana was unique, and we have, by the Constitution that was adopted in 1972, the state is obligated to teach Indian education to all students, Indian to non-Indians.
And really?
Yes, and it took till about almost the 1990s before it was actually funded and they started doing this. And they have been doing a fairly good job with this education.
Daniel, why is that important?
It is important to, for non-natives to recognize the history and the value of natives, and that we were always here. A lot of people believe there was no history or life in North America until Christopher Columbus appeared.
But he had some greeters.
Yes. We were here, and we were doing well, and had been doing that for millenniums. And tragically, within 100 years of Columbus making it to North America, there was about a 90% die-off in native population in the Western Hemisphere.
Most of that disease?
Disease, yeah, that we had no natural immunities to. There was an even greater one when them first visitors come in from Scandinavia, made it from, they hopped from Greenland to Iceland to Newfoundland and then into the Great Lakes country.
So I ask you, and I didn't let you answer, what is the thing people least understand about the tribes here in Montana?
That we have more alike to you and everybody else than not. You know, we're not out, we're not all feathers and beads. We're not dancing and drumming all the time. We almost all have a job, an occupation. We strive really hard to educate our children. We worry about the same things they do, health care, mortgage. You know, we don't get a free ride because we're Indians. There is no magic check that comes from the government every month saying, here you go.
Which is why you would like to get some land and do more, yeah, even more with economic development for your people.
That's important, and it's with all tribes throughout the United States. Some tribes were blessed with some natural resources that they were able to maintain. The Navajo used to take their oil income and use that to pay health care for the entire nation. So you have some of these things like that. The Crow Agency sits on one heck of a large deposit of coal that helps fund part of their tribal government and stuff like that.
So when you bring that up, it's kind of interesting to me because, you know, there's this big debate about coal. But we don't understand sometimes when we're limiting certain industries, those are having rippling effects on even tribal people.
Yeah, but the Mandan have pretty good oil money, too, in the Dakotas. So it just depends where you're at. But, you know, we have fishing and hunting rights. So, you know, you'll see natives hunting right outside of Yellowstone Park harvesting buffalo. And that is treaty rights. And
my son actually is a hunting guide, and he was asked by some tribal folks to come. They'd never hunted buffalo, mm-hmm. so they killed the buffalo, and then my son got to harvest it for them mm-hmm. and cut it up, and they were just so thrilled to have it. He said, oh, man, it was such a cool thing because he was, you know, to be part of that. It's really ceremonial for tribal mm-hmm. people. It's not as much like
it
what
is.
We do.
It's, you know, it's the buffalo was our brother, you know, early on. And he sacrifices him for man because he loves man. It's not because he's a lesser animal. It's just that he has a bigger love for man. And so when we harvest a buffalo, we try to use every part of that just to honor that critter. And in the teachings of our seven grandfathers, the buffalo stands for respect.
Huh. And yet so many people are stupid enough that they go try to touch them at Yellowstone Park. Yeah. They learned about respect really quickly when they, yeah. It is an animal.
Yeah, you don't want to pet one.
So who, like to your tribal folks, this is just an interesting question and I don't know, you can take it where you want, but who is the creator?
The creator, he's the first man. But you know, in our creation story, it is Sky Woman who came from the sky and came to earth, and earth was all water. And it's a beautiful story about how the birds flew up and caught her and drifted her down and settled her on the back of a turtle. And then they held a conference, a council, to what do we do now? And with her, in one of her hands, she was carrying all the seeds that it would take to nourish a planet. But they needed ground. So they had heard legend that there was ground underneath the water. And they all dove down for it, and none of them could. Finally, the muskrat, the poorest of all swimmers, dove down. And he never came back and never came back. And finally, some bubbles come up and the muskrat floats to the surface. And he had perished looking for this. And they opened his paw and there was mud in his hand. And they took that mud and they spread it over the top of the turtle shell. And from that, Turtle Island grew and grew and grew. And with the seeds Sky Woman had brought, they were able to plant all the plants that we need to nourish the animals that came to live on Turtle Island. And when we say Turtle Island, we mean all of the Western Hemisphere, both North and South America.
What do you love about your culture? And I mean, that's so rich to listen to as me, but for you, what is it about the culture that makes you so connected?
The simplest things have a lot of meaning. You know, we, as natives, were great observers. We never went out and tried some food and found out it was poisonous. We watched to see other animals, avoided that. But to go out and to watch something as simple as the chickadee go from branch to branch and gather food and stuff like that. And it shows you how that even those little animals have that knowledge, and it's blood knowledge that they have, that they know what to eat and how to find it and how to survive. It's like this morning, you're waking up to a foot of snow.
Yeah, a foot.
Yeah. I was looking at a robin yesterday, thinking you're singing a pretty cheerful song for what's coming. He wasn't so cheerful this morning when it was 25 degrees cooler.
What do you think the United States, people in America, could learn by looking back at the tribes right now in the current situation we're in?
Well, one of the things that is probably really pressing, and in a couple of weeks I'm going to go to Bozeman, and the Secretary of the Interior is there for a listening session for some of us elders to talk about the harm the boarding schools have perfpetrated on our people, and to be able to talk to them and tell them that story and how it happened. The story with the boarding schools, that was trying to get the Indian out of the native. George Washington told Congress that they had to find a way to make Indians farmers so that they could live on 40 acres, so that they could have the land. Thomas Jefferson says the only way to do that is to educate the children to be non-Indians.
So it was really re-educate.
Yeah, so this has been going on for as long as there's been a United States. Just about all the politics that come from the federal government for Indians are that way. Blood quorum. You got to show blood quorum to be an Indian. My brother will not register as an Indian because he says in the United States they register horses, dogs, and Indians by blood quorum.
How does that feel as a native?
Well, when they establish that policy, they eliminate half of their tribal, their treaty obligations. And their theory was that in seven generations that the Indians would no longer exist. And I'm at that last generation in my tribe family.
Are you the seventh? You're the seventh generation?
I am down to that quarter, and that's what it takes for a quarter to be recognized. You could be identified as a first descendant of a recognized Indian. But I gave one of these coins.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to do this. I'm going to turn this way.
One of these coins to Senator Tester one morning.
I'm going to show this to people.
And said that objects on both sides of that, they thought were going to be extinct. But I'm here to tell you the Indian and the buffalo are both doing well, and we're going to be here forever.
What do you, is it a, I don't know how to add, so Daniel, is it a fight for recognition or just never letting down, do you know what I'm saying?
Really it's not the fight, it's re-educating people all the time. We'll have these challenges. I've done stuff with Indian Health Service, and you think you've won the battle. You finally get this done, then 3 or 4 years go by, and you have the same problems. You have to re-educate people all the time. It just isn't one of those things that soaks in.
Do you feel like people don't take it seriously?
Normally they don't, because it doesn't affect them individually. But then they don't realize how much it affects them without their knowledge of it.
So when you look at other racial groups and how they seem to make headway, is that bothersome when you're a tribal person? Because, I mean, just from me looking, my own opinion is it looks like other groups get a lot of help and you guys are still treated like second-class citizens.
Yeah.
That's how it feels to me as an observer, and I'm not one, but I'm an observer.
We came a long way. We never got the right to vote till 1921, 22, somewhere in there. And that was only because so many natives served in World War I that they felt obligated that we should honor these people by maybe giving them the right to vote. Let's make them citizens. Because under our regular constitution, we weren't even counted in the census, where slaves were counted as 4/5 of an individual.
And the natives were
not counted.
Wow.
So it took a long time for that to happen. And some of them in the census would say it was because of taxation, but it was just policy.
So your concern then, I'm sitting here thinking about, you just had that quarter, you were showing that piece, and you're down to the last, what they count as, you know, officially now you're a tribal right. person because of your bloodline. So what happens to your children, because they probably, that's less. And is that kind of the plan? I guess what I'm asking, Dan, who gets to decide who's an Indian and who's not? I mean, because it's like, that's kind of bullshit. Because then your children are all of a sudden not counted as much as you. And then what happens to your grandchildren and on? And at some point, they're just getting rid of Indians.
Right. It's all up to each tribe, each tribal nation. And you have an enrollment and a criteria for this enrollment to be a registered member. But like with the Little Shell, you have to have descendancy back to the Red River country. And you have to be a quarter Indian. Any Indian. but you have to have that descendancy back. So there'll be tribes all over the country that will re-examine their criteria for enrollment. And they'll probably go to a descendancy to where you can trace your descendancy back and move forward so that your children can keep that. And it isn't the federal government anymore that...
Well, good.
that has that say. We as tribal nations have that say in our enrollment.
So what do you think of the move that you've seen with people crying for reparations and and that kind of thing? What's your thought on that?
Well, I believe I told a couple of people what I'm going to tell the secretary, that when the Pope was in Canada a year or two ago and apologized for their boarding schools, that was a real hollow apology. What would be a real apology is to offer educational benefits to our children, because education is the greatest equalizer in this country. If we could send our kids to college, give them degrees so that they are on more equal footings with non-Indians, that would be the thing to do. And I think that is something you should consider. Just the saying, I'm sorry, just don't buy it.
And that would be a real payback that has more value, especially to tribal people, because you're so into your descendants and that sort of thing.
Right.
Rather than saying, hey, I want it to be made right for me,
yeah,
you make it right for my children,
yeah,
and their grandchildren and that kind of thing.
And we don't want money. Give them an education. They can make their own money.
So how did you get this? So this is the meeting with the Secretary of the Interior.
She's having a listening session in Bozeman, and the tribe asked me to go there and represent them as an elder of the Little Shell tribe.
So is that exciting, or is it one of those things where you go, here we go again?
It's an opportunity. Let's see how well it works. But, you know, to be given the opportunity is a great step forward. You know, here in Montana, we're building a new historical society, is building a new museum. And from the get-go, they brought the native tribes in to help design part of that new museum that's going to be here for the next 100 years, showing our history. But usually, as an afterthought, they would ask us to come in and talk and not bring us in on the ground floor.
So that's some movement.
It is movement. And it's recognition, you know, that kind of history is valuable.
So the last thing I'll ask is, you're doing this session in Townsend. And what can people in Townsend expect to hear, to see, and to experience on that night?
Well, I'll be also there with the magpie drum. And we drum for our powwow here. And we'll probably bring a couple young gals with us that will do some traditional dancing. And we can let them talk and tell you a little bit about the dance and stuff like that they do. Because every dance is a little different. And some of them are really strong medicine. Like the jingle dress. There's 365 bells on that dress. And that's for a prayer. Each one is a prayer for every day of the year. And when they dance, every step is a prayer for somebody who isn't there. We dance and we drum and we sing for those that can't be there. The old, the ill, the disabled.
That's what's really interesting about, I mean, I think every culture is started with stories, but the tribal culture really is, everything has a meaning. And I think that's deep. You know what I mean? I find that intriguing, because you see meaning in everything, the stream, the leaves, the cycle of life, where I think sometimes as Americans, we've lost that ability to see the earth as something other than something I get to take.
Yeah.
Own. I get to own it, like anybody really owns the earth.
At the end of the month, I will be in Great Falls for the International Border Study Commission on the milk in the St. Mary's River. And we as natives believe there is value to have that water in that river. The water animals have a right to live too. You can't just dedicate all of that water that flows downstream for agriculture. You have to have a base for life in that water system. And listening to my counterparts in Canada, that'll be there. And we will study this. And that is one of the hopeful things we have come out of the new. They have to renew these compacts every 50 years or something like that. Then that value of that water in stream flow will have a value that has to be maintained. You can't just dewater a river and say it's okay.
So what is your hope for your people and for the future?
Well, I would like to say how proud we were that day we got federal recognized after 157-year battle with the federal government. But 157 years from now, I would like to hear a little boy stand up and say, I'm proud to be a Chippewa Indian of the Little Shell Tribe of Montana. We want to preserve our heritage, all culture, our beliefs, our stories, so that they're here for time immortal.
Man, thank you. Yep. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and hopefully you guys will turn out for the event in Townsend. I'll have more information at the end of this on how you can go, where you can go, and what that's all about. So, Daniel, thank you.
You betcha.
All right. But I have more for you. So I don't know if you know this, but I just learned this, that this is American Indian Heritage Month starting in November. Again, the Townsend event is 10 to 4 on Saturday. Another thing I wanted to mention to you too, just because it's kind of off the cuff, but it's funny how things happen all at the same time. My wife and I over the weekend went to the movie Killers of the Flower Moon. And this is based on a true story of a terrible case involving, I think it's the Osage Nation, I think that's how you pronounce it, very wealthy Indians because they found oil on their property. But then the story is about how white men married people, had them killed so that they could get the money. But it's a powerful, powerful movie, 3.5 hours long, but worth every second of it. One other thing I wanted to bring up here and show you a story. This is years ago, I went to there's a Cape Arrow lighthouse in Oregon. And it was originally called Chief's Island until the white man took it over. They built a lighthouse out there. Anyway, years ago, I went out there when a whale was found dying. And it kind of just had this spiritual thing with this island. And so when I heard that the tribes got it, I was very good friends with the tribal leaders. And I said, I heard that there's a bridge that goes out to that island. They wanted to blow that up, dismantle it, so that nobody could go out there again. It would be a sacred island again. And so I called up the tribe and said, can I go out there and shoot this story before you do that? So I was could be the last white man on that island. And it was just something spiritual for me. But so here's that story.
When I found out that they were going to tear down the bridge between land and the Cape Arago lighthouse, there was something in me that just, I had to come out here. The bridge needs to be replaced. The cost, about $1 million. So instead, the Coast Guard will dismantle the bridge. We contacted the Confederated Tribes of Coos, Lower Umpqua, and Siuslaw Indians to see if they'd meet us for one last trip to Chief's Island.
Well, it's Chief's Island because it is, you know, one of the places that where the chiefs would come to. And, you know, there are some great stories that go back not only of Chief's Island, but of Women and Children's Island, of what happened here. People that were being forcibly removed and moved up to Yahats to encampment, and of the stories of how the chiefs actually helped hit people on the island, you know, to keep them away from the United States Army.
I don't know what it is. The Native Americans say there's something spiritual about this place, and I agree. Kathy and I visited the area and stayed in the shadow of this island several times. We'd come here to rest, to make important decisions. We came here right after we found out I had cancer. We came here to escape. Very soon, this island and some surrounding acreage will be transferred back to the tribe by congressional order.
you know, the lighthouse that is on the island is the third lighthouse that's been there since 1866. You know, the very first one lasted just a few years, and this lighthouse, I believe, came in 1930. There are a number of people that are buried out in this area. Certainly, tribal members have been buried here for literally 10,000 years.
Oh man, we are at the top of the lighthouse. This is so awesome.
I've always had a connection here from a story I did years ago on a whale that was beached out here. I was probably 26 years old. Then when I was in my 30s, I came out here with Gordon Ross, a county commissioner, to do a story on the island. And then when the government finally started working to give this land back to the people that it belonged to, I came out here with the tribe and did a story. You know, I think in life there's times when endings are actually beginnings and we just don't recognize them that way. And I think this is one of those moments where something is ending but something new can begin.
We're coming to the end where we're actually taking out the bridge and looking forward to the transfer of this land back to tribal hands for the first time since 1855. This didn't happen overnight. This didn't happen. It is not the legacy of any one person. It is a legacy of a tribe. It is a legacy of a group of people working together through time to have a part of their homeland return, to have a village site return, to have culture return that was stolen. Very big deal because of the cultural significance. It's a very big deal because of the emotional significance. Tribal members' perspective, it would be important to both preserve this place, preserve its history, and to keep it, you know, as a very, very special and spiritual place, not for economic development, but certainly as a spiritual and a cultural icon for our people.
And yeah, maybe I'm over spiritualizing it. I don't know. I don't think so. I think there's something that I needed to be here today. I just needed to be here today. That's all.
People actually try to get over this thing.
And again, the bridge was then removed the following week. And yeah, it's kind of funny, honestly. I think I needed to see that story again, too, and hear those words from Daniel. So, life's funny. Thank you, God. And thank you, people of Townsend, here again. There's the event, Saturday, 10 to 4. Yeah. Have a good Halloween, and I will see you on Thursday.